Support for Access Utah comes from the Utah Humanities Council, enriching cultural, intellectual, and civic life by providing opportunities for all Utahns to explore life's most engaging questions and the wonders of the human experience.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. A new documentary series premieres on Monday. That's from KUED Television. It's called Utah Vietnam War Stories. We're going to talk about it. Here's a little bit from the open of the first program.
Vietnam, we didn't even, haven't even heard of Vietnam.
Yeah, we were just kids. Kids with guns.
Vietnam was about a generation of Americans who truly lost their innocence.
From the gung-ho to the what the hell we're doing here to let's get the heck out.
Actually, some people, when they come back, were ashamed they'd have been there, unfortunately. I wasn't. I looked for opportunities to tell it what it was really about and to tell about my brothers.
I made it. So many didn't.
Those are some voices of Vietnam War veterans from Utah. Some or thousands of young men and women from every walk of life in Utah served during the Vietnam War. Almost 400 of them didn't return. And on the program today, we're going to be talking with the producers of this documentary series, Elizabeth Searles, who was instrumental in Voices of World War II, a program that you probably saw on KUED, and Ken Verdoya, who's director of documentary series at KUED. We'll also be joined by Jerry Cannon, a veteran who flew missions. He lives in Tremont, and Stu Shipley, a veteran who was in combat, I believe a foot soldier. He's here with us in studio. Stu Shipley, I believe, lives in Tooele. And Mr. Shipley, thanks for joining us.
I appreciate the opportunity of being here. It's quite an honor.
I believe that was your voice near the end of that clip, that you returned, so many didn't. And you were telling me before we went on the air, it's something I think a lot of us cannot really truly understand. It's survivor guilt is just a very hard thing.
It is something that every returning Vietnam vet deals with. And it really didn't hit me until about 10 or 15 years after I returned from the war and got into civilian life. You realize the men that you put in body bags and flew them home to their families to grieve the rest of their life.
You were telling me as well that in country, when the green troops would come in, you'd realize many of them were not going to survive, and so you would distance yourself from them.
You did, because you went over to the same men you trained with, and you were extremely close to these men, and they would lay there on their life for you, as you also would watch their back and do the same for them. But as these men were killed and sent home, you realized that you just didn't want to get too close to the new men coming over, because they probably wouldn't be there much longer than you either, or even if you made it home. So it was a very psychological thing, and we were all so young, did not know how to deal with this in no shape, form, or fashion.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into some of your experiences, very extraordinary experiences, of course. And I believe you were telling me that you didn't even talk about these experiences until about a year and a half ago.
It took me alcoholism, drugs. It's the typical Vietnam vet syndrome, I believe. Not everybody is the same. Every man is an individual amongst himself, but for the most part, this stuff will never go away. What you saw, what you did. There was so much controversy over this war. Not too many people were behind you. And so you you handled this the best way you could. And for me, I just would not talk about it. I tried group therapy at the VA, and God bless the VA for the help they have given me the last few years, and all the vets that they offer the help for. They are a wonderful organization. But with your inner self to keep peace in your mind and so you can function like a regular human being, I closed everything out in my life, people, family, friends, and you you tend to just kind of do your own thing, but that's not the way a normal person is supposed to live. And so it creates major, major problems in your mind and in your heart and in your soul. It runs very deep.
Mm. We'll follow up with Stu Shipley. We'll also are bringing in Jerry Cannon, who's another veteran. Mr. Cannon, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And we have with us on the line as well Ken Verdoya, who's a director of documentary programs, and Elizabeth Searles, producer of this series. Ken Verdoya, welcome back to the program.
Good morning. Great to be back with you.
And Elizabeth Searles, welcome back to Access Utah as well.
Thank you very much.
So let me start with Ken Verdoya. Why this production and why now?
How can you not listen to Stu Shipley and say this extraordinary American voice can remain silent and on the sidelines of our society? Stu is just a great example of the reason why KUED got behind this project about 2 years ago. 7 years ago, we'd undertaken a major documentary series featuring the voices of veterans from World War II, the greatest generation, as it's been identified time and time again. And we realized as we brought forward that 9 hours of documentary programming that these men and women, even though they had faced the horrific realities of combat, they had a sense of closure because of their return with a mission accomplished, being welcomed back, and being celebrated. As we considered the next step for a documentary series, we looked at the voices of Vietnam. And even if the conflict had been turned over many times by the media, we felt there was a real strong sense that the voices of the men and women who had served there had become forgotten voices. They'd never had the opportunity to discuss the experience. They'd never had been welcomed back. And so our Vietnam Story series started from that premise. Can we sit and patiently listen to men and women who were in country, who served their nation to the very best of their ability, who suffered stunning loss? And can we learn from their stories as we welcome yet another generation of veterans back from the combat fields of Iraq and Afghanistan?
I should mention, at the end of this program, the last 15 minutes or so, we're going to be talking with some people focusing on the current veterans. This part of the program, we're talking about the new KUED documentary series, Utah Vietnam War Stories, and the first in that series premieres. It's called Escalation. That's Monday night at 7 p.m. on KUED. We have with us Ken Verdoya, Elizabeth Searles, Jerry Cannon, and Stu Shipley. Let's turn to Elizabeth Searles next. So you were involved in the World War II stories. Is it a similar process? You go out and find veterans and ask them to tell their stories?
Yeah, it is a similar process, and I work with two fabulous guys, Rick Randall and Jeffrey Panos, and those guys have been really dedicated to veterans and finding their stories and getting to know them, and they bring the initial group of people in for interviews, and through those people, you get other people. They say, you ought to talk to so-and-so, and through the Veterans Administration, you get people as well. So it's a similar process, and we've interviewed over 80 Vietnam War veterans now. And 44 of those faces appear in this program on Monday night.
Mm-hmm. And you went and got some footage as well, footage from the times, and matched that very skillfully with the interviews. I guess that was a lot of
work. A lot of that footage comes from Wisconsin Public Television, who took on this endeavor before we did. And they generously gave us over 30 hours of footage. And then, depending on the story, we go then and find footage that matches these stories from the National Archives and other places.
Yeah. Mr. Shipley and I, before we went on the air, we were both impressed by the way you wove that footage in. Were there surprises? Of course, as Mr. Verdoya said, we all kind of have some understanding of the Vietnam War and the controversies and the ins and outs, but there were probably some surprises as the veterans actually began to tell their stories.
Well, the surprises are subtle. They're so unique. Each of these veterans are so unique in their the myth is that it's sort of a monolithic group, and you get surprised at the individual stories and personalities, and they're just a wonderful group of guys.
Mm-hmm. Let me turn to yes, go ahead.
I'm not certain I had a lot of surprises, other than every story carries its own surprise with it.
Mm-hmm. Let me turn to Jerry Cannon. You flew missions, right? You were in a jet.
Yes.
Tell me when you went to Vietnam, how long you were there?
I went to Vietnam in December of 65, and I was there until December of 66, and I went back. I volunteered three times to go, and my second tour over there was during Tet in 1968, and then my third tour was over in Ubon Ratchathani in Thailand. In 1972-73 period.
Mm. So that's a lot of stress flying, I'm imagining. And there is one gentleman in the series who I imagine this would be a fear of yours, of getting shot down. That one gentleman tells you a story of being a POW. Everyone who flew, I guess, had to be prepared for that possibility.
That's true. Yeah, I flew 294 combat missions, and nine different times I returned home with some type of battle damage to my airplane.
Hmm. I wonder if you'd tell us the story that you tell in the first episode, a time when you refused to, essentially refused to follow orders and fire on a target, and we're very glad you didn't.
Yeah, we had a target down in the Delta, which is south of Saigon, and after the fact marked the target, and we started the mission. I was checking out a guy as a new flight lead, and he dropped one bomb, and then the fact said, they're coming out the south way, and I was lined up to go in from the south, and I had napalm. And as I headed towards them, I just had this feeling in my gut that there was something wrong. I just had kind of a, I don't know how to describe the feeling, but said, don't do it. So as I flew over them, rather than dropping napalm on them, I just rolled up on the side and looked down at them, and it was, you know, I'm doing 350 miles an hour, and I was only 100 feet above them, but it was women and children, and they were driving their cattle, their water buffalo and whatnot, and just DD-ing out the south road. And so I pulled off, and I said to the FAC, I said, there's something wrong here. This is just women and kids. Double-check the coordinates of the target. And he did come back, and he said, no, that's the right target. And I said, well, find us another target. We're not going to take this target. So he goes back to Saigon, 7th Air Force, and checked and come back and said, that's the right target, and we don't have another target, and so I don't know what you're going to do. And I said, well, we'll just take our ordnance back home. So we went back to Benoit and landed, and I took a lot of heat for a while about not taking the target we were assigned. Later on, we found out that the Vietnamese commander over that area was actually getting protection money from the villages to not have them targeted. And the village refused to pay, and so he fragged them. That's what they call it. Put it on as a target. And So I was awfully glad that we had refused it, and after two or three weeks, why the heat went down. And so we didn't make a mistake, you know.
Yeah. Stu Shipley, so you're shaking your head and kind of understanding that very confusing place must have been. The Viet Cong just blended in, and sometimes you didn't know who the enemy was.
You didn't. During the daytime, Mama Sam would do your laundry, or you'd go down to one little village out in the jungle somewhere, and they'd greet you and bow to you, and when nightfall came, like you say, you never really knew who the enemy was, and it was, you know, people die in war. Women and children die in war.
Mm-hmm. The only way you could tell who the enemy was is if they were shooting at you.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
You knew that they were the bad guys.
It was a very demoralizing thing, I think, to all American troops over there to decipher who was the good guy, who was the bad guy. And the people suffered greatly for this. And let's face it, we went there to help the South Vietnamese people. And we wound up in a mess. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very difficult. And thank God for soldiers like this that made the decision not to napalm. Napalm is a, you know, I was a machine gunner in weapons platoon. I was on the ground. This gentleman was in the air. Napalm is, if you've ever seen a body get hit with napalm, it is not a pretty sight. Mm-hmm. It is not a slow way to go, a fast way to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, had he dropped that on those women and children, think what he'd have lived with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you just joined us, we're talking about a new documentary series from KUED. The first program of this series premieres on Monday evening on KUED, Utah Vietnam War Stories. And the first episode is called Escalation, First Few Years of the War. We're talking with two veterans of the war, Stu Shipley, who's in studio, Jerry Cannon with us on the phone. We have Ken Verdoya from KUED and Elizabeth Searles, producer of this series. If you'd like to join this conversation, you're welcome to do that at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or you can get an email through to us from upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. Later in the program, we'll talk with Matthew LaPlante, Terry Scow, and Jill Atwood, talk about veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. We turn back to Ken Verdoya. Thousands, I'm reading here, of Utahns served in the Vietnam War. Some almost 400 died, I wonder if these percentages are typical of many states. I don't know if you've done those comparisons.
Well, they are. Just about 2.6 million American servicemen served in-country in Vietnam. One out of every 10 became a casualty there. Of course, we all know the number of 58,000 deaths that were battlefield-related. Over 305,000 were seriously wounded. 75,000 came back permanently disabled as a result of those combat wounds. So if you look at Utah and you say about 10,000 young men went and served, about 380 were actually killed in combat. More than 1,000 were wounded. The reality is that Utah very closely mirrors the national experience, and these young men and women came from every small town in the state and every large city. They were a complete cross-section of what Utah represented in the 1960s and 1970s. The one thing I want to point out is that this is not a linear telling of the Vietnam War history. This is an oral history project that listens patiently to the men, and let me again emphasize women who participated in Vietnam. Some very, very touching stories from women who served in country as nurses or in the Air Force or in the Army as support officers. They were involved with medical triage. They were involved with caring for wounded. You really gain a very diverse experience. But this is not the telling of the Vietnam story from how did we get into what was the domestic controversy. This is literally an oral history listening to these men and women who were there and their experiences. Some of them are quite funny. Some of them you will never forget because of how searing they are. When Stu talks about approaching a tree line, having been caught in an open marsh ambush, it's one of the touching moments of this documentary. It is as vivid as he describes it as if it occurred last week.
We do have some audio. Let's hear that next. This is titled My God, I'm Dead, and that, I believe, refers to a friend of Mr. Shipley's. This is searing stuff. Let's hear this.
So we were ordered to stand up and jump into the rice paddy to get down into the mud to get more cover because we had quite a few men getting hit. I stood up, and my buddy stood up behind me, and there was 8 or 9 more guys behind me. And we scrambled off to the side of the rice paddy trail. And I felt someone touch my shoulder. And I turned around. And my partner had been shot through the heart. And he touched my shoulder. And I turned around and he looked in my eyes and said, "My God, I'm dead." And he fell dead at my feet. And I drug him off the rice paddy trail.
That's Stu Shipley. We have him in studio. You can hear the emotion. This is some 40 years later, and still very vivid for you, obviously.
Yeah. You know, this is something that any Vietnam vet that had been in combat, the stories these men have in their hearts and in their souls and in their minds are difficult at best to tell. And everybody carries their own ball and chain, so to speak. This is just one incident of hundreds of thousands of men that were brave and laid down their life for freedom. You know, we all raised our arm and took an oath our arm to the square and took an oath for God and country. And this was, you know, one of my first experiences. This man died in my arms, and you know, his family has suffered the rest of their life, aunts, uncles. This just doesn't affect mom and dad. Mm-hmm. His brothers and sisters and these men that volunteered to serve in this miserable war gave their all and would do so today. The brothers in arms, they gave their all. And this is just one of many, many, many things that happened that scars you for life. Mm-hmm. It does.
If I might jump in here, because
yes.
There's another aspect of the story that Stu tells in the documentary that shows just how quickly a moment could change, because just before they come under fire, Stu and his ammo carrier are sitting next to each other, and their sergeant tells them to crack open a C ration because they're going to be real busy and they may not get another chance to eat. And Stu reaches into his sack, pulls out a C ration, and it's dated, Stu, correct me, I think it's 1941.
That is correct. That
and,
is correct.
And it's a World War II era C ration.
That
and
is correct.
This moment where Stu and his ammo carrier kind of ruefully look at each other and say, well, you know, here, this is it. And they share kind of this gallows chuckle, and then everything hits the fan. It shows you how in a moment it could go from an extraordinary period of close bonding to the terror of battle.
Mm-hmm. Let me bring in our first caller. This is Barbara in Hiram. Barbara, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Thank
with
you.
Your comment.
Of course, we haven't seen this, but these men are my peers, and some of them have never been the same. They have not been able to function. But they've not been taken care of either. And here they are, 65, 68, 70 years old. They told friends to do anything to not go if their number was a higher number and they might wait. I'm just hoping that this is not a John Wayne version of a glorious battle, because it was a horrible thing for people my age, a horrible thing. So I'm hoping that the producers talk to some of those people. They're not glorious. They didn't make the newspaper, but they've lived with this the rest of their lives.
Boy, I greatly appreciate the concern of the caller. And let me just say from the heart of the way we approach this, we did this with very clear eyes. We wanted to honor and respect the service of those who went. But we also listen openly, and there are very, very different experiences. So to say that this is a champion of the glory of war would not be fair or accurate. But I would love for you to see the program and then let me know what your take is afterwards. Please call me at KUED and let me know what you think after you see this program.
Great.
Because
Thank
I think you'll have a very different conclusion.
Is the caller still there?
Yes. Yeah, go ahead, Stu.
Are you still there, ma'am?
Yes, I am.
Well, God bless you for taking the time to call in. I can't tell you what it means to vets to have people... I can tell this is coming from your heart, and God bless you for that. I had a sneak preview of this, and this is an extremely moving documentary. You will see the care, the great passion that was put into this by all these great people and the vets themselves. They tell it like it is, and thank you so much for...
I just want to be fair to my friends.
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. And this is what this is about. This was a very controversial war.
Yes.
I had friends that got drafted. I volunteered. I had an uncle that was 26-year Marine, and I couldn't get out of that. I mean, I idolized him. I said, when I grow up, I want to be like my uncle. He was a proud, strong, caring man, and he demanded respect anywhere he went. And I thought, and I was quite a juvenile delinquent when I was younger, and it the Marine Corps squared me away, and I was proud to serve. But I had friends that, you know, burned their draft cards and went to Canada. I didn't hate them for that. They did what they thought was right for them. But the Vietnam veteran that came back from that war, we were spit on and called baby killers. We
it
were.
Would have helped if there'd been some.
Yes, but
thank you when yes. they came home, but there
yes.
wasn't.
And that's
you
that's,
and these other friends of mine live with this every single day.
Constantly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Appreciate that call. And you can call as well, 1-800-826-1495. We have another 6 or 7 minutes here, and then we're going to move the clock forward to talk about some Veterans Affairs today with some other guests in the last segment of the program. We're talking about Utah Vietnam War Stories. It's a new documentary series from KUED, and the first program premieres Monday night at 7 on KUED. The number is 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or you can get an email to us at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. Let me turn back to Elizabeth Searles. And as Ken Verdoya said, these gentlemen and women that you interview come from just about everywhere in Utah. You even got an interview with someone who's in the South Vietnamese Army. I guess he's now living in Utah?
Yes, he is. He is, and he was good enough to come in and tell his experiences from the point of view of the South Vietnamese ARVN forces that were fighting with the U.S. forces, and he was fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And there's
he was terrific.
At least one Native American gentleman.
We have several, actually,
several. Okay.
But in this particular story, this gentleman is from Cedar City, and he was, I believe, a Marine, and he was a scout. He also did he was a tunnel rat, too.
Yeah,
went down in the tunnels and investigated what was in there.
Yeah, that was quite harrowing just to watch, just imagining what that would have been like in those tunnels.
Yeah, that would be horrible, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask Jerry Cannon again. You, Mr. Shipley, has told us it took him some 40 years before he even talked to anyone about his war experiences. What was your experience coming home like?
Well, I'd been in the military for 10 years, and when I came home, I didn't really have what I would call post-traumatic stress, but I think it was 10 years after the war, after I was over there, before anyone ever said to me, "Well, thanks for your service." Up to that point, it had been bad stuff. I had a friend of mine go to the Air Force or go to Denver Airport to pick up his wife, and he had his uniform on, and as he was walking in there, two or three guys thought it was funny to knock his hat off, and then they shoved him when he picked it up, and then they ripped his medals and things off his uniform, and nobody helped him. Everybody just stood around and watched while they pounded on this guy that was just serving his country, doing the things that the country was asking him to do. And that was pretty much the attitude I thought of people in the whole thing. And then, you know, I still think we abandoned the POW MIAs. I know of a good friend that got left over there that we know was alive, but they just didn't follow up to try and get him out. You know, it was the thing that was most traumatic to me about it was the loss of my friends, the treatment that the POWs got in camp, and then the treatment that they got when we went off and left them. You know, it was just, it was gut-wrenching. People that you'd been flying with for years that get shot down and they're gone.
Mr. Shipley, you said it's only been the last year and a half. You've talked about this, and you also said that's helped you.
It has. Chain of events in every Vietnam veteran's life. It seems like there's corners and doors to open every day, every minute of every day. And unfortunately, this the suicide rate for Vietnam vets is extremely high. And it's because over the years there wasn't the recognition, I believe. Now there is so many people that, you know, I wear my hat and it says Marines and Vietnam vet, and I will go into Walmart or a store or a restaurant, and usually 2 to 3 to 4 people will thank me for my service. But it's been so many years that the Vietnam vet has lived with this. You know, he's gotten so bitter. You get very, very bitter against your government, against people in general. You get inward, you're very inward. You don't like being around crowds. You don't like being around people because you have the trust is not there. And so for me, it was a turning point to where I knew I was going to have to do something, or I would have had a gun to my head, and which I did quite a few times. Thank God I was thinking of my grandchildren and my sons and didn't, you know, and a lot of people say, well, that's the most selfish act anyone can do. Well, I would say to those people, you walk a mile in my shoes and then maybe you'll slightly understand why I put the gun to my head. Mm-hmm. It is not a thought in my head now. I have come to grips with this. The stuff doesn't go away for any Vietnam vet. Mm-hmm. And God bless our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Different time, different place, same stuff going on in their head when they come home. And I'm grateful that the Veterans Administration has really come a long way in the last 10 to 15 years. The people up there are marvelous. And if you're a veteran listening today with any kind of problems, war-related or not, you get yourself to the VA and get some help. They are there to help, and thank God they are for many of us that live with this.
And coming up in the next segment, we will have a couple of officials from the Veterans Administration, along with Matt Plant, who's done extensive reporting on the veterans' issues, and that'll be coming up shortly. I want to ask Mr. Cannon, Jerry Cannon. Mr. Shipley has talked to fellow veterans to get the help that you need. My question to you is, what would you say to the rest of us? What can we do to help veterans?
Well, I guess just acknowledge that, you know, we saw so much about Second World War, the Great Generation, and all of that, and now everybody's behind the troops in Afghanistan, Iraq, whatnot, and rightfully so. But I don't know how you get to the Vietnam veteran and say to him, you know, we didn't treat you well, we didn't stand by you like we should have, but we acknowledge our mistake now. But I don't know how you get that to each individual veteran, other than I think this is going to be a big boost to people recognizing how poorly they got treated, how badly the war was, the psychological effect of that war, lack of support, poor identification of who was good, who was bad. It's a gut-wrencher, and I think we're going in the right direction with this kind of a show to try and help people recognize problems that were associated with that were not with the other wars that we've had. All in the past, we knew who it was. In Vietnam, we didn't know. So it's a difficult situation.
Well, we'll leave it there with this part of the program. Just to give the last word to Ken Verdoya, we've got this episode coming up on Monday night at 7, and then there are planned additional episodes?
At least two more, and as my colleague Liz Searles pointed out, we've interviewed almost 90 veterans to date from across a broad range of service. If a veteran is listening, and as Stu called out to them, if they have needs, go to the VA. But if they're interested in sharing the story, especially after they've seen the way we approach episode number one, visit us online at KUED.org. There's a way to make contact with us because we are still interviewing veterans. We expect to have as many as 200 interviewed by the time this project is over.
Give that address again.
It's www.kued.org.
Very good. So still a chance for you to tell your story if you
haven't
told it yet.
Absolutely. We want to hear from everyone.
And this is an extraordinary documentary. It's Monday evening at 7 o'clock on KUED. As Ken Verdoya said, there are some humorous stories here as well as some gut-wrenching stories and just the stories of being in the jungle. One gentleman had a spider size of his face wrap his arms around his face. Stories like that, along with some stories that you've heard from Mr. Shipland and Mr. Cannon. Our thanks to Ken Verdoya, who's the director of documentary program at KUED. Thanks for joining us.
My great pleasure.
Elizabeth Searles, producer of this documentary series. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And I wonder if I could have our veterans stay on just briefly as we get into the next segment. I think it would be helpful to make that transition. But we thank Jerry Cannon for being with us in this segment. And if you could stay on the line a bit, Mr. Cannon, and Stu Shipley, if you'd stay here in studio just briefly as we get into the next segment. We're going to be talking about current Veterans Affairs with Matthew LaPlante, who's on the USU faculty and has reported extensively on this. Terry Scow, Executive Director of Utah Department of Veteran Affairs, and Jill Atwood, Public Information Officer, Utah Department of Veteran Affairs. And that conversation is coming up following a brief break.
Coming up on the next Bluegrass Breakdown, we'll be taking a gander at some of the many recent reissues and collections that have found their way into the new Bluegrass CD bins in what would have been Bill Monroe's 100th year on Earth. I'm Dave Higgs, and we'll be spotlighting celebrations relating to the Big Mon, as well as Mack Wiseman, Reno and Harrell, and Carl's story on the next Bluegrass Breakdown.
Saturday night at 10 on Utah Public Radio.
On the next Wood Songs broadcast, we're celebrating one of the most unusual and amazing voices of 20th century folk music, John Jacob Niles.
Go away from my window, go away from my door.
Don't miss this incredible hour of American music on the next broadcast of the Wood Songs Old Time Radio.
Friday night at 10 on Utah Public Radio.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
We're talking about veterans of Vietnam War on the program today. We're going to talk in this segment about veterans returning from the current wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And we have kept our two veterans on, at least briefly, in this segment. And we're joined now by Matthew LaPlante. He's Assistant Professor of Journalism and Communication at Utah State University. And I think we've dropped somebody, line number three. Okay. He is assistant professor at Utah State University, was a reporter at the Salt Lake Tribune, and now does blogging and reporting. Matt LaPlante, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much. Glad to be there.
And I should mention that reporting on the Salt Lake Tribune was veterans, war reporting, and veterans affairs mostly. And so an interest in this topic. Terry Scow, Executive Director, Utah Department of Veterans Affairs, joins us as well. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Jill Atwood, Public Information Officer, Utah Department of Veteran Affairs. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And I believe Mr. Cannon did leave us. That's the line that was busy. We do have with us Stu Shipley, a Vietnam veteran. And I want to move this forward. I don't know if you ever interact or talk with veterans of America's current wars.
Yes, I have. Hi, Jill, by the way.
Hi, Stu.
You know Jill.
How are you?
I know
I
Jill
so
very
well. I'm so excited to hear you were going to be on.
Well, I didn't know, but it was quite an honor, and I thank you for, yeah. But I do know Jill very well. She is a great lady that has helped many vets, as these other gentlemen. I'm not familiar with the other gentlemen, but I do know Jill personally, and mm-hmm. It is great. Great to hear your voice this morning.
And you've received some help from the
definitely
the VA.
The VA programs that is out there for the Vietnam vet is it's actually unbelievable now. 25-30 years ago, it just wasn't there. I mean, they were there, but the recognition wasn't there. But now, a veteran of any war, I mean, if you're a veteran of a war, you need to take advantage of the benefits that the VA has to offer, and wonderful people. I'd like to say also that this documentary that's coming up is extremely moving. I encourage everyone and their families to sit down Monday evening and watch this. The men and women that put this thing together, I'm a very close friend of Rick Randall's also, they have spent countless hours putting this documentary together. If you want to get an insight of what the combat vet went through in Vietnam and the problems he shared and had, it's a must-see. So,
let me turn first to Terry Scow here. It's my impression, just as a layperson, that things have changed for the better, at least some things, for returning veterans these days from Vietnam to today. I don't know if that's an accurate impression.
I think you're correct. When folks back from Vietnam, and I've got many friends of mine that are Vietnam vets, and they actually lowered the standard, let me, military, and went to Vietnam as well. But from the bad treatment they've got is the good treatment we have today for the returning troops and thanking them in the airports. And so I think that whole culture shifted. Hate the war of the warrior.
Mm-hmm. And you fought in Vietnam. That's imagine that's very, very important. The reaction you get from people, your community members, when you come home.
Well, it absolutely is, and I think one of the things that folks don't realize is that after the war in Iraq and Afghanistan commenced, I started getting calls to my office from Vietnam vets who were starting to relive. PTSD, and they were fearful for their son or daughter who was in the combat zone. And I'm sure that same thing happened with World War II vets when their Vietnam went to war.
Mm. I don't know if you're shaking your head, dear Stu. I don't know if you had that experience.
I did.
Worry for your family members who are over there.
My oldest son joined the Marine Corps, and this was during Kuwait. Trying to follow in his father's footsteps, I suppose, and I was extremely worried that his life would turn out like mine. Luckily, he didn't go quite to Kuwait, but he was on standby in Okinawa. That was a very quick fought ending kind of a thing. But yeah, I do believe that this thing is a generation to generation, and God bless these men coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. It is just what it is. It's a different time, different place, but it is still war, and all the factors factor in.
Mm-hmm. Matthew LaPant, I know you've done a lot of reporting on this, concerned about veterans' affairs. What are the problems out there that we still need to address with veterans and when they return?
I think the biggest issue is a problem of paradigm. We need to recognize that the commitment that's made to veterans when we go to war, the commitment that a supposedly grateful nation needs to make to veterans when we go to war is not just a commitment that, happens when we slap bumper stickers on the back of our cars that say, I support the troops, and not just a commitment that says, we're going to welcome them home when they come home, and we're going to give them a ticket tape parade, although that's nice. I know for a lot of veterans it's nice to feel welcomed and to feel like their service is appreciated. But to put this into context, the last veteran of World War I, a war fought nearly 100 years ago, just died. So the commitment that we make to veterans is not just a short-term commitment, it's a long-term commitment. It's a 100-year commitment, I like to say, a century commitment. And so we're not making just promises to take care of them for ourselves today, this generation. We're making that long-term promise. And so the thing that I'd say that needs to be addressed is this continual kind of teaching of the next generation, the generation after that, of why it's important to continue to take care of these people long term, because the commitment is such a long one. Mm.
And it does see reporting on this, it does seem to be that a minority of the country is bearing the brunt of these wars. As we've heard, these traditions of serving the military tend to run in families, and with the volunteer army, you tend to have a small number, so that the person, the general public, could if he wants to, sort of disconnect himself from the, you know, the news overseas.
Yeah, absolutely. The you know, when you have such a small percentage of people serving, the opportunity to disconnect, you know, even if people don't want to, they say like, oh, you know, I care about the veterans, I care about the warriors, I care about the war, but just about everybody else in the United States has the opportunity to disconnect. And again, long term, that becomes a problem because it becomes easier to say, well, this is getting expensive. Oh, we didn't know we were going to have to take care of all these PTSD issues and, you know, veterans in prison issues and, you know, taking care of, you know, female veterans, veterans of military sexual trauma. This is getting expensive. Well, they were all volunteers. So, you know, look, yeah, sure, I support our warriors and I want to take care of them, but put themselves in this boat. And that's the risk you run when you have an all-volunteer army is that in a democratic nation, the majority may decide to abandon these people. And, you know, so far, I think culturally we've had this shift, like Terry said, this kind of shift toward this ideal of, you know, caring for the warrior, even if you didn't care for the war. But long-term, that remains to be seen.
We turn back to Stu Shipley. You talked very movingly about the problems you had after you came back for many, many years. And even with this cultural shift, I'm sure, I don't know if you've talked to veterans of the current wars, they're going to have some of the same problems coming back.
And they do. Like I say, it's different time, different place, different war. But war in itself is war. And along with that comes the anguish, the nightmares, the terrible things that these young men see in Afghanistan and Iraq. They're pretty undescribable to most people in general. You know, it's like the old saying goes, let me explain to you what it feels like to free fall out of a plane at 10,000 feet and then pull your chute 1,000 feet before you. Well, that person that does that for a living or for a sport, in his mind, that is something that's so natural. But to somebody that hasn't jumped out of a 300-mile-an-hour plane at 10,000 feet, you really can't figure out what it really feels like. So to the general public, I say, you know, if you hadn't been there, smelled it, tasted it, and saw it, we can explain as best we can. You just have to open up your heart and your mind and accept the fact that this is war. And, yeah, I have talked to quite a few Afghanistan vets. And, you know, I'm 64, and these men are much younger. But I see in their eyes the same thing I see in Vietnam vets' eyes. Mm-hmm. It's a very deep kind of a void, and you can see that they're struggling. Not all. But that is war, mm-hmm. and that's what it does to a man.
We're talking about Veterans Affairs, on the occasion of the premiere on Monday of a KUED documentary called Utah Vietnam War Stories. It's a new documentary series. The first episode, Escalation, premieres on KUED 7 p.m. on Monday. And this part of the program, we're still talking with Stu Shipley, who's a veteran of the Vietnam War, and we have with us Matthew LaPlante, who is an assistant professor of journalism at USU, Terry Scow, executive director of Utah Department of Veteran Affairs, and Jill Atwood, public information officer, Utah Department of Veteran Affairs. You're welcome to join us. The conversation is 1-800-826-1495. That's the phone number, 1-800-826-1495. And let me turn next to Jill Atwood. What are some of the services available? We've heard from Mr. Shipley. He's urged fellow veterans to get in and get some help if they feel like they need it. What are some of the services?
Sure. Quickly, I just want to make a quick distinction. I'm actually with the VA Salt Lake City Healthcare System.
Okay.
I work closely with Terry Scow's office, which is the Utah Department of Veterans Affairs. But actually, we're the federal entity of VA here in Salt Lake City, and I oversee the healthcare system. And I'm glad that you asked that question because we have so many new programs for our new returning vets. One is our OIF post-deployment clinic. And this is a place where guys and gals can just walk in right off the street and walk into this clinic. They don't even need an appointment and say, hey, I just got back. I'm struggling, or I need to see a doctor. I need to know what benefits are available to me. I need help filing a claim. Whatever their issue may be, this team is in place to help them personally navigate the VA system. Because let's face it, when you get home, you've got a lot of things going on and you're a bit overwhelmed. The last thing you want to do is walk into a big medical center and try to figure out what's going on. So these folks are in place to really take them by the hand and walk them personally through the process. Our big goal here at the VA right now is to really destigmatize this PTSD mental health issue. We do have a lot of men and women coming back home with these issues, but most of them are coming home with very common readjustment issues. We want folks to know that that's normal and that there are folks here that they can talk to, counselors that they can talk to, and we're really just trying to educate the community and the public that this is normal. And you know, we can't do it alone. The VA cannot do it alone. That's why we try to educate the community, family members. We try to get as many people involved as possible, clergy, local law enforcement, just everyone who may come in contact, and veterans. We've all got to be looking out for these folks.
Is there information that you could give to community members or a place to go if you have a friend, family member who's a veteran, you want to know how to better help them?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they can call anyone here at the VA Medical Center. They can call the Public Affairs Office. They can call the Enrollment Office. If there is someone that they feel is struggling and they need some counseling right away, we actually have an open intake session every Tuesday at 11 o'clock, Building 16 here on the VA Medical Center campus. They can come in, no questions asked. Just bring your service record, and we'll get them sitting down and talking to someone right away.
We just have about a minute left. Just very quickly, a similar question to Terry Scow. Is there a central point where people can go to get some information?
Yes. In addition to the VA Medical Center, I would also direct people to our website, veterans.utah.gov. We have folks that travel across the state, service officers that help veterans and their families file for their benefits. So we would love to help them. And as Jill said, the medical center is there. In addition, vet centers are a place where veterans can go and get mental health help, you know, no questions asked, no stigma. One in Salt Lake, one in Ogden, or I'm sorry, one in Provo, one in St. George, and we're hoping to get one in Ogden as well, but those are a great resource. But veterans.utah.gov, and thanks to our listeners who are veterans.
Thank you. We've reached the end of our time. We've been talking with Matthew LaPlante, who is assistant professor of journalism at USU and has a blog as well. Just Google Matthew LaPlante. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Terry Scow, executive director, Utah Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you. And Jill Atwood, who's public information officer with the Federal Department of Veteran Affairs. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
And our thanks to Sue Shipley, who's a veteran of Vietnam War, for joining us. Thank you.
It's been my privilege, and thank you so much. God bless our troops, God bless their families, and God bless America.
And thanks for listening to Access Utah.
This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1, 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1, 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1, 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1, 88.7 Moab, and KUSUFM HD1, 91.5 Logan.